Mr. President, Mr. General Secretary, distinguished delegates, half a world away from this place of peace, the firing, the killing, the bloodshed in two merciless conflicts have for the first time in recent memory diminished after adding terrible new names to the roll call of human horror. Names such as Halabja, Medushar, Inshar, and Spinbuldak. There is today hope of peace in the Persian Gulf and Afghanistan. So too in the highlands and coastal cities of southern Africa, places of civil war, places of occupation by foreign troops, talk of peace is heard. Peace for the tortured nation of Angola. 6,500 miles east in the Southeast Asian country of Cambodia, there is hope now of a settlement. The removal of Vietnam's occupying forces. And finally, in this hemisphere, where only 12 years ago, one-third of the people of Latin America lived under democratic rule, some 90% do so today. And especially in Central America, nations such as El Salvador, once threatened by the anarchy of the death squad and the specter of totalitarian rule, now know the hope of self-government and the prospect of economic growth. And another change, Mr. Secretary General, a change that, if it endures, may go down as one of the signal accomplishments of our history. A change that is a cause for shaking of the head in wonder is also upon us. A change going to the source of post-war tensions and to the once seemingly impossible dream of ending the twin threats of our time, totalitarianism and thermonuclear world war. For the first time, the differences between East and West, fundamental differences over important moral questions dealing with the worth of the individual and whether governments shall control people or people control governments, for the first time, these differences have shown signs of easing. Easing to the point where there are not just troop withdrawals from places like Afghanistan, but also talk in the East of reform and greater freedom of press, of assembly, and of religion. Yes, fundamental differences remain. But should talk of reform become more than that, should it become reality, there is the prospect of not only a new era in Soviet-American relations, but a new age of world peace. For such reform can bring peace. History teaches, and my country has always believed, that where the rights of the individual and the people are enshrined, war is a distant prospect. For it is not people who make war. Only governments do that. I stand at this podium then in a moment of hope. Hope not just for the peoples of the United States or the Soviet Union, but for all the peoples of the world. And hope, too, for the dream of peace among nations, the dream that began the United Nations. Precisely because of these changes, today the United Nations has the opportunity to live and breathe and work as never before. Already, you, Mr. General Secretary, Secretary General, through your persistence, patience, and unyielding will, have shown in working toward peace in Afghanistan and the Persian Gulf how valuable the United Nations can be. And we salute you for these accomplishments. And in Geneva at this very hour, there are numerous negotiations underway. Multilateral negotiations at the Conference of Disarmament, as well as bilateral negotiations on a range of issues between the Soviets and ourselves. And these negotiations, some of them under UN auspices, involve a broad arms control agenda, strategic offensive weapons and space, nuclear testing, and chemical warfare, whose urgency we have witnessed anew in recent days. And Mr. Secretary General, the negotiators are busy, and over the last few years they've been engaged in more than an academic exercise. There is movement. The logjam is broken. Only recently, when the United States and the Soviet Union signed the INF agreement, an entire class of U.S. and Soviet nuclear missiles was eliminated for the first time in history. Progress continues on negotiations to reduce in massive number strategic weapons with effective verification. and talks will begin soon on conventional reductions in Europe. Much of the reason for all of this goes back, I believe, to Geneva itself, to the small chateau along the lake where I and the General Secretary of the Soviet Union had the first of several fireside chats, exchanges characterized by frankness, but friendliness too. I said at the first meeting in Geneva that this was a unique encounter between two people who had the power to start World War III or to begin a new age of peace among nations. And I also said peace conferences, arms negotiations, proposals for treaties could make sense only if they were part of a wider context, a context that sought to explore and resolve the deeper underlying differences between us. I said to Mr. Gorbachev then, as I have said to you before, nations do not mistrust each other because they're armed. They're armed because they mistrust each other.